Hi, I'm Beth.
And I'm Jamie. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast.
Did you just forget your own name? It sounded like you forgot your own name. Sorry. Welcome to Driver Picks the Podcast, where I pick the podcast.
And I shut up. Okay. The fucking double is throwing me.
And Jamie shuts okay, Cole. And today we're joined by none other than Hannah from Raising Perdition and Raising Winchesters. Hannah, would you like to say hello?
Hi. Happy to be here. Hello.
We're very excited to have you. And today, the three of us are going to be chatting about the 18th episode of season 6 of Supernatural, titled Frontierland. Jamie and Hannah, what are your thoughts?
Okay, well, I feel like I should start us off this week with my PSA of the day. What do y'all think it is?
I fully forgot to look at a PSA, I'm not going to lie. Do you have any ideas, Hannah? Not to throw you immediately in the deep end 30 seconds into the episode.
I have no clue what it could be.
Okay, well, it can't be about time travel because that's part of the real life. So I'm going to say that, regular sexual health checks are important. I'm going to put that in there because that is oddly relevant this episode. It's also relevant to like any episode that they decide to give Sam an STI. But I'm going to say specifically this episode, they do draw attention to, you know, sexual health being important. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. I don't know why. It was a really obvious scene in this episode.
She's wrong. No spoilers, but she's wrong.
I don't have a guess. I'm very excited to hear what it is, though.
I'm always excited to hear what it is because I'm always wrong.
This week, my PSA is proper nuclear reactor safety.
Oh, okay. Because that's more relevant to the common person than sexual health safety.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
We don't want Chernobyl 2.0.
Can you elaborate on that or are you good?
I'm good.
Cool. Let's move right along then. Hannah, what was your first thought about this week's episode?
Honestly, like the whole time watching this episode, I'm just like, Dean Winchester is so cute as a little cowboy. And like, he's just having the time of his life. And it just makes me feel like so happy for him, but also so sad. Because it's a day. He gets one day to like have a little fun.
He's just my little guy.
I know. He's just so cute. Like from the start, when he finds out he's going to be going to Frontierland, he's just like, this is the best day of my whole life. Like, it's just so cute. He's adorable.
It is. And actually, watching this episode, I realized, and like, you weren't even supposed to be on this episode. This is like a fun little happy accident, because as I was watching, I was like, oh, Hannah is the person whose opinion I actually really want on this, because I know that you're a Dean girly through and through. And I'm interested because we have like, with Darb, Jamie and I have a complex history, particularly starting with like after school special and like how he doesn't seem to, like whenever Darb is involved with writing Dean's character, he seems to be reduced to kind of this sort of ladies man womanizer, like kind of gross and skeezy stereotype, and it doesn't really fit with the rest of his characterization for the majority of the rest of the show, right? And as I was watching this episode, I was like, oh, this is really interesting, because I feel like instead of taking his character and kind of twisting it into this kind of gross persona that doesn't really fit, instead they really lent into his actual character, let him be like kind of excited and nerdy, and then had every other character bully him for it the entire episode. And like, I don't know if it was just me, but I was like, oh, they still are bullying him just in a different way.
Yeah, I think they were. And like, I also feel like though he like doesn't care that much. The only time that it really seems to bother him is when the guy is like nice blanket and he like takes the serape off and he's like,
forget it.
He looks so sad. I know. But like, they don't bring it up again. Sam doesn't really like push it further. He's just like, that's too bad. But yeah, I feel like he's just happy to love what he loves. But he does definitely get bullied by like everybody in the episode for it. Like even Cass, not on purpose, but Cass is like, and blankets are customary. Yeah, he's like, yeah, they are. Yeah, I do. I feel like, though, at least we're not getting, like, the really disgusting ladies man Dean in this episode. Mm-hmm. Like, I never like that. Especially, like, not that he's a ladies man, but that sometimes they do push it, like, so far and make him so gross. And I just don't think that's in character.
For me, at least, it's not the fact that they make him a ladies man, quote unquote. It's they make him a kind of gross and skeevy ladies' man.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, whatever. Like, he's a ladies' man, great. But it's like they kind of push it to the point where he's low-key at, like, sexual harassment.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think even in early seasons, they kind of do that. And they do it a lot of times with, like, underage women as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's really in character. I think sometimes he just gets a little too gay and they're like, ooh, gotta make him really gross with women so that we remember that he likes women. Just a reminder. So let's make him like overtly womanizing and like misogynistic and just gross.
And just hope that the fandom forget that he's kind of gay.
Right. And everybody's like, but we saw it. Like, we just saw how gay he is. Like, we're not going to forget.
But actually, like, along that same kind of, like, track as well, I thought it was really interesting. This episode, I actually really like it. Like, as just, you know, blanket statement, I really enjoyed this episode for what it's worth. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is, like, looking at this episode in particular from the perspective of this being, like, Dean's fantasy versus the reality of what the fantasy is. So like, obviously he has this idea of like, you know, obviously later we get like Tombstone and like they're talking about the Clint Eastwood movies in this episode and stuff. And it's like you said before, like he's like so excited to go and he's excited to wear the clothes and he's excited, you know, that the authenticity of the horse shit, you know, like he's so excited about all these things. And then he kind of gets confronted by the reality of the lifestyle. Like, you know, there's the alcohol that tastes like petrol and there is like, you know, the prevalence of sexually transmitted diseases and everything's dirty and all of these things that are kind of like, oh, the reality of the fantasy is not actually maybe what I wanted and or expected. And I think that that's really interesting, particularly given the like picket fence idealistic place that they kind of put him at the beginning of this season and like how that sort of contrasts with like what we have seen Dean's primary drives be and like how Sam in particular understands what Dean wants from his life versus like the reality of what Dean's life is, I think is like a particularly interesting thing for this episode to like explore.
Especially considering he doesn't actually like any of it really. Like he had the white picket fence life. And it really wasn't what he wanted. Like, there's a reason that he was so easily sucked back into, you know, hunting as a lifestyle. And, you know, not to say Zachy Boy was right, but, like, you know, he is drawn towards helping people. And he has so little self-esteem that, like, hunting just seems like the easiest way for him to help other people. So he does it, despite the fact that it makes him absolutely miserable.
Yeah, I mean, it does make him miserable. I'll give you that much. I think it just makes about all of them miserable. Yeah, having Dean be like confronted by the reality of what he had as a fantasy, I think is really interesting because that's basically his character arc this season. Like we've talked about this point to death, essentially, but like it boils down to Lisa and Ben being this sort of like idealistic version of what he wants. And it's like not necessarily that he wants them in particular, but like he wants what they represent. And I think that this episode is like a really interesting comparison to that, basically, is what I'm trying to say in the short, condensed version and not the rambly 10-minute version I gave you.
I'm sure you'll cut it into the short, condensed version anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like both fantasies are kind of like also him wanting an innocence that he doesn't have as well.
Yeah.
Like Lisa and Ben, they aren't a part of like the hunting life. And so there's an innocence there. And then like, obviously, there are a lot of things that happen in, like, the Western world that aren't innocent, but it's, like...
It's a simpler time.
Yeah, it's simple, and it's, like, it's a young boy's fantasy, like, something they enjoy playing as, and, like, I think it's an innocence that, like, he wishes he had, and he just doesn't have, and he keeps trying to, like, grasp at, but he just...
Stop trying to make innocent happen. It's not gonna happen.
Right. It's just not for you, Dean. Sorry, baby. It's just not going to happen.
I think it's like really interesting, like you say, like it's something that he's excited to play. Like it's like a game. And I think that there's something to be said for Dean and escapism and the way that he loves media and the way that he loves like sort of dressing up. Like, you know, obviously we see it this episode. He's so excited to like really immerse himself into like the concept of Western. We see it in later episodes like LARP and the Real Girl and like, you know, the way that he actually... He might not like immediately be like, oh, I'm so excited to do this. But as soon as he is doing it, like he fucking loves it and he's so invested. I think that, yeah, there is something to be said for the way that it is an escapism for him. And even like talking about late episodes like Mint Condition, we get the quote from him where he's like, you know, I love the movies where you know the bad guy is going to lose, because he doesn't always know that in his real life. So it's nice to have that form of like, oh, this is safe. This is like a controlled environment for me to understand my emotions, you know, like you can go through the media in like a funny kind of meta way. I think that's probably how a lot of people view Supernatural as well. Like, you know, as like a show, like as a safe space for them to like go and be like, okay, I know that it's a story and I can, you know, work through stuff through this show. And I think that's, you know, seems to be a sentiment that carries through the fandom relatively significantly. So it's interesting to see it, I suppose, portrayed here in a sense as well. And it is ongoing for his character too. Like, we've seen it before and we will continue to see it through the show.
I also think the other thing is, not only is he going to a setting that he's romanticized for a long time, he also does know the ending. Like, they literally have the diary of Samuel Colt, which says the Phoenix dies. They have that in writing. They know that the monster's going to get killed. So it's kind of like they know this is already a foregone conclusion. So they don't have to worry about going back and sort of coming up against the unknown, because they kind of already know what happens, because they've already got the risk record of it.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. So it is, yeah, kind of like going to see a movie where you're like, well, the bad guy's going to lose. Unless it's Megamind.
Mm.
In which case, the bad guy, however...
Isn't the bad guy.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Megamind.
I was recently made to watch Megamind.
Oh, wow. Just recently.
Yeah. Well, I watched it when I was a kid and I didn't like it. And then Jamie and Naomi were like, what the fuck do you mean you didn't like Megamind? So they made me rewatch it with them.
It's so good. I'm glad you saw it again.
Yes. And I did like it. Did you like it more? The second time. Yeah. As an adult, good. I was like, oh, I appreciate this a lot more.
Good.
Anyway, sorry.
I can sidetrack this if you want.
By all means, please.
I have theories.
Oh, okay. Hannah, this is an exclusive Jamie theory. We don't always get theories when we've got guests.
Well, you gave her an episode where there are theories.
I'm excited and I'm nervous.
Always. That's how I feel when Jamie starts speaking about her theories.
It's not my fault that you invited her on for an episode that inspires theories.
Yeah.
You should have known better.
Yeah.
If you didn't want me to be obnoxious to our guests, you should have known better.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Actually, I will take full responsibility for any psychic damage that you take during the next 20 to 40 minutes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. First up, I think this episode does actually, at least for me and my brain, confirm a theory that I've had. Now, obviously, you don't know about that one. Beth knows very much about that one. Souls as power. I think Crowley was vying for purgatory because of the souls within purgatory and the power they possess. I don't think that's still like a theory at this point. I think we can pretty safely say, like, at least partially, his motivating theory was the souls, because it's all about the souls. It's all about the power. Whoever has more souls is probably going to win whatever they're fighting for, whether that's hell or purgatory or heaven or earth. Having souls is a hell of a leg up in that. Now, this connects to my next point. Last week, I made the joke. Well, not really the joke. I theorized about what would happen to Cass if he did get power, if he did win heaven, and what would happen if he got that power. I am now more concerned about what he's going to do to get that power. Because he seems to be doing some dodgy things this week. And I understand that, you know, necessarily other angels are not the best gauge of whether what he's doing is dodgy or not. But this is an angel that he describes basically as his second in command.
His lieutenant.
And for his lieutenant to be having issues with what he's doing to get power, that's concerning for me.
Okay.
That says to me that they're gearing up for some sort of like, he's going to commit atrocities to get power.
You think this is Castiel's war crimes era?
Yes, I think he's going to commit war crimes.
Okay.
I think that's what they're teeing up for. Okay. Because you do not kill your second in command for no reason. If you're not committing the war crimes, why would you kill your second in command instead of explaining how you're not committing war crimes? He already doesn't have a lot of angels on his side. So I don't see why you would murder someone
When you already had dwindling numbers.
When you already have dwindling numbers, unless what they're accusing you of is bad.
Okay.
It just doesn't make sense to me for him to murder her unless she's, A, not lying. Like, she's actually accusing him of things that he did do.
Mm-hmm.
And also holding enough sway with his numbers and knowing that whatever he has done will turn them against. And, like, she says something along the lines of, like, what you're doing is not right or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I can't remember the exact quote.
I didn't actually take it down.
I'm not a scholar.
You're not a scholar, unlike Hannah and I. It's important to note as well that Cass told Bobby that she was swayed by Raphael, or corrupted, I think he says, by Raphael. So, like, there's multiple perspectives, and it's difficult with all the heaven stuff because it's really all happening off screen.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have to take the crumbs that we get at face value, and, like, it's hard to get the full picture.
Yeah.
I don't mind telling you, at some point we will get more of a full picture of what's been happening with heaven and stuff, but, like, right now we do not have the full picture.
Because what I took from that, like, the way I interpreted those two scenes, like, one after the other, was she's confronted Castiel for something that he's doing that he should not be doing. He's killed her,
mm-hmm.
and then he's had to swing it some sort of way with Bobby.
To convince Bobby.
Convince Bobby. And if what he was doing is not going to be considered big yikes by Bobby, why wouldn't he have told Bobby the truth? So, like, there's a reason in my brain that he's lying to Bobby, because we see the scene and she confronts Cass over what he's doing. She's not saying, oh, hey, like, maybe Raphael's not that bad. Mm. Like, maybe we should just resolve this peacefully. Like,
yeah.
She's not advocating for Raphael in that moment. She's saying, hey, you did this thing that was a bit.
Well, she's saying, tell me it's not true. Yeah. I think is, yeah.
She's like, disprove what I've heard, because what I've heard is bad.
Hannah, do you have anything to add?
Not specifically to Jamie's point, but I will say every time I hear her say, tell me it's not true. And, like, she's like talking about his dirty little secret. My brain immediately thinks that she's going to be like, tell me you don't love that human. Yeah. Cause, like, he's just, like, specifically helped Dean when she was like, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
And every time I think that's what it's, and I know it's not, but every time it's like, those are the vibes at first.
Yes.
Like, tell me you're not cheating on me with him.
Yeah.
Right.
Tell me that this piece of shit isn't the one you're literally risking it all for. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? You gave up your entire family and our mission from God for that fucker.
Right.
Actually,
I mean, I guess that's the other interpretation of, like, tell me it's not true, in terms of, like, tell me that you didn't give up all of the souls from the Titanic for that one dude.
Mm, yeah, because we'd have had the Titanic be plot relevant recently. Just not a sentence you can say about every show.
No.
I do actually, while we're sort of talking, did you have any other theories before we move on?
I think that's the big one. We didn't get too much else from this one. Like, we got, oh, well, they've got a way to solve the mother of all problem, blah, 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 at least in theory.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. All right, cool. I want to just take a moment to appreciate Rachel, the angel who we only get this episode, and I think that's honestly a travesty, because she's kind of a queen, I'm gonna be honest. Like, the way that she walks in and she's like, I'm sure your issue is really important, but you need to learn your place. Iconic. I love her. She needs to put them down a peg. And also, I want to talk about the quote that she gives. Either one of the boys or Bobby asks, like, and who are you kind of thing, and she goes, I'm his friend. And Sam's like, what, and you think we're not his friend? And she says, I think you call him when you need something. And I think that is really, really interesting for two reasons. Number one, because I think she has a point. Ultimately, like, their relationship is more complicated than that. They've been through a lot together, but especially this season, you could definitely argue that point. They do just call Cass when they kind of need him for plot stuff. And it's not so much like, hey, want to hang out?
And that's because of the Sarah Gamble long con, because of them.
And I was just going to say, number two, I think that it's really interesting from the perspective of this being a Darb episode, like, where sort of Cass's arc goes in later seasons, and, you know, his feelings of, like, low self-worth, which I don't mind talking about in front of Jamie, because it's not, like, plot relevant as such. Like, he definitely goes through, like, that period of, I suppose, that, like, concept of, like, you want me for what I can do, not for who I am. Like, and I feel like that's something that he as a character really struggles with. So it's interesting for me that it's being sort of really made a point of here so early on comparatively with like sort of where it ends up being really explored in like later seasons. And I think, yeah, I think she has a point.
Me too.
You know, I could totally understand him feeling like, yeah, you literally only call me when you need something and you don't seem to care how much shit I keep telling you I have going on. But then, you know, to Dean and Sam and Bobby's credit, like Cass also is really not giving them that much information about what's going on. So it's like a very complicated web. But I did want to do a shout out to Rachel because I do think she is cool as hell. And I think the fight sequence with her and Cass is also one of my preferred like angel on angel fight sequences because they seem like relatively evenly matched and it's a lot more like the choreography is really fluid. I feel like a lot of the time with the angels, it's like a lot of focus on like the clashing of their like angel blades and it's a little bit more sort of power or blunt force, I guess. This felt like really sort of fluid, like they were ducking under each other and there was like more fluidity to the strategy that they were trying to attack each other with, and I kind of liked it.
I think part of that is like neither of them wants to kill the other angel, you know, like yeah, their fight isn't supposed to be to the death and then it ends up being to the death. And so, and I think I like Rachel kind of gets like her moment when she dies, like we see like the wings and all that stuff, and I think yeah. They kind of like pay as much respect to her as they can for like a one time, like you see for a full 2 minutes character, you know?
Yeah.
Though I will say, big yikes, the woman dies again.
Yeah.
And the other woman that dies in this episode is an off screen assault and death. So.
But man pain.
Right. We know nothing about her.
Yeah, exactly. We know that she was his wife and she got assaulted, then murdered. So. Not great.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
No.
We're going to cut that out of context.
Yeah, I'm going to take that exact quote and I'm going to put it everywhere, honey. You're going to get cancelled like that.
Yeah. I would.
What's really interesting is Rachel really reminds me of an angel we get later, but actually I think still within Gamble era, actually, Hester, who basically arrives, mm-hmm. delivers like one really fucking impactful monologue and then just nopes out and we like never see her again.
Right. I also love Rachel because I feel like when she comes down in that first scene to like talk to Sam and Dean and Bobby, she's just like, Castiel, I'll handle it. And she comes down and tells them all these things Castiel has told her in private, like, that bother him about Sam and Dean. And then Cass comes and he's like, no, stop. Like that, I told you that in secret. Like you weren't supposed to tell them I felt that way. I think that's really cute. But she's like 100% just like standing up for her friend. Like she doesn't even say like.
It's like her bestie has a shit boyfriend. And so she's like.
Right. Like it has nothing to do with like with their ranking or like the fact that they're both angels. She's just like, he's my friend. And he comes and he's like, you didn't have to do that. I wish you hadn't done that, actually. Because now they know yeah. I maybe feel this way, and that's awkward. What am I supposed to do with that?
Dean says we're not supposed to talk about our feelings. What have you done?
Right. Dean's like, no, Rachel, what have you done?
But, like, I think it's really interesting as well, like, what Jamie was saying before. Like, she comes to Cass and she's like, you know, tell me it isn't true kind of thing, like these, you know, rumors or whatever. And like, I feel like if she didn't respect him or like have faith in him as an individual, she wouldn't have gone to meet him in a private place. If she felt like she needed backup from other angels, like as much as, you know, Jamie mentioned before, they have like dwindling numbers, I suppose, like they still have more than just her. So like, I feel yeah. like it says something that like she actually does respect and care for him as a, either, you know, a superior or as a friend or a, what's the word I'm looking for?
Amanda?
No, I want to say like trench mate, like they're
army buddies.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like they're in the same squadron, I guess, yeah. You know, like she cares for him as like a, know what I mean? And so like, they don't want to hurt each other because they do care about each other, but it just kind of comes down to, well, we can't just walk away from this now. Like this has to end here and it's going to end with one of us dead, which is just really unfortunate. And like, obviously for plot reasons, it kind of has to be Rachel who dies, but it's just frustrating that, yeah, they introduce another excellent female character just to kill her. And again, kind of for man pain, because also, like, part of it is that it obviously hurts Cass to do it. I do love, though, that Cass obviously gets wounded in the fight. And I want to say, I feel like this is maybe not the start of, but, like, at least one of the very first, like, really pointed examples of Cass having an injury that completely debilitates him that is not supported by previous or future canon. Because, like, he has this tiny little cut. And then he's like, oh, I can barely stand. And it's like, we have seen you absolutely fucked before.
He just wanted to fist Bobby Soul.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, how little or how much power Cass has at any given point is really just so sporadically, just like, it's just decided by, I swear to God, they just spin a wheel and they decide how much energy Cass has this episode and, like, what can debilitate him. Or, like, it's just so fucking random.
We have a saying for this.
Mm-hmm.
Plot, plot, plot. Convenience, convenience, convenience.
You're watching Supernatural. That's exactly what it is. They're like, what's plot convenient? Yeah. I think it's very sweet that when he is in this, you know, dire situation, he goes to Bobby because Bobby's house is like his safe space. I was like, oh, stop, you know, and then he like fully collapses onto Bobby and like he wouldn't do that. Like he wouldn't let himself do that if he was with someone he didn't trust. And I think that that is just so lovely and speaks so much to how much he does trust Bobby, like the boys aside, because like they're obviously not there, but like Bobby specifically.
And then also like how much Bobby trusts him, and like Bobby clearly cares about him too, because he lets him do the soul touching and he tells him like it could go really badly, and Bobby's like, you need it. So like, and I know it's like for Dean and Sam, but also like, I don't know, you know, it seems like they could have probably done something other than that for like that doesn't put Bobby at risk. There's probably something they could have made up for the episode, but they didn't. So
it's giving that, you know, that whole thing where it's like, if you leave Sam and Cass alone for more than 20 minutes without Dean, they'll just decide to do the most insane, reckless plan that could kill the both of them. And then Dean comes back and he's like, hey guys, what's up? And they're like, never mind.
What's that about? Yeah.
It's like the same energy.
Yeah. Cass and anyone who's not Dean just going to really make bad decisions. We just need Dean around.
He's like the babysitter of the three of them, which is like so bizarre because that boy he's not that responsible.
What's really funny is because normally Bobby is the responsible adult. Like in previous episodes, other than the one where like Bobby gambles for his years or whatever, like generally speaking, Bobby's normally the one that's like, you're a dumb shit. Pull your head out of your ass. This is how you solve it.
Yeah.
Clearly. Stop trying to kill yourself.
Yeah. I wonder if it's maybe just because they are on such a tight time limit. Like, they really have minutes left on the clock for this. And, like, Bobby has lost his boys so many fucking times in recent years. Like, I think that he was just like, look, you know.
He can blame Kripke for that.
I do love, though, when Cass is, like, explaining the risks and Bobby's like, okay, and then what happens if something goes wrong? And he's like, you'll explode. And I was just like, oh, okay.
Okay, no worries.
It's like the opposite.
Sugarcoat it.
It's like the opposite of, you know, when you go in to get like a minor surgery done or something and they give you like this form of like all of the different tiny little minute things that could go wrong. Mm-hmm. It's like the opposite of that. It's like, oh.
There's this one thing that could happen, but like it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And actually, I wanted to touch on the fact that when Sam and Dean come back and, you know, they've obviously just missed getting the ashes and stuff and like they're pretty like obviously upset about it. And Cass makes the point of saying like, I never want to do that again. And I think that's really interesting because I think that he could be referencing a couple of things. He could be referencing like sending Sam and Dean so far back. You know, he could be referencing almost losing them. He could be referencing having to touch Bobby's soul and like risk Bobby in that way. Like, I think there's like a lot of different compounding factors, but I think it's really interesting that he's like, because Dean can usually sway him pretty fucking easily. Like, usually Dean just has to go, Cass. And Cass goes, ugh, okay, you know, and does the thing. But in this instance, he's like, no, I never want to do that again. And he's, like, pretty sincere about it. Regardless of, you know, Jamie was saying earlier, like, war crimes, question mark? It seems pretty clear that his priorities when it comes to, like, you know, Sam and Dean and Bobby are still, like, I wouldn't risk you, basically.
I think war crimes, question mark, should just be the episode description.
Done.
Nothing else. We're not running anything else. It's just war crimes.
That saves me having to come up with an actual episode description, so I'll take it.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier. Along the lines of the soul touching, just two things that are minor. But first of all, I hate that Cass, just like the first thing he says is, I need you to let me touch it. Like, what? Bobby has no idea what you're talking about. What a weird thing to say, Cass. Like, why would you say that?
I know.
I hate it's that such part.
A funny way to put it. And also, Jamie made this point before we got on the call with you. She was like, you know, like, Cass has basically touched everyone's soul at this point. Like, he hasn't touched Sam's, but only because it was missing. Like,
yeah, right.
Like, he tried.
What's so wild to me, though, is now that scene in retrospect. Like, okay, he was pretty sure Sam didn't have a soul. But if Sam did have a soul.
Yeah, he fully risked exploiting Sam. Did not give us that caveat in that episode.
No, it's okay.
And honestly, I think this is just like the writers didn't think that hard about it. But they're like, we have to give some sort of consequence for this, like, power up. Otherwise, why wouldn't Cass do it all the time?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, no, it retrospectively means that, yeah, when he was like trying to work out whether Sam had a soul or not, if Sam did have a soul.
And didn't he also do it to that little kid in that episode? I can't remember. It's been so long now. And normally I would have gone back and listened to the edits. So I would be like, you know, aware of what we talked about in previous episodes, but we haven't bothered because of the strike. So I'm like midway through editing 601 right now, instead of midway editing like 612, like I normally would. So isn't that, because that's the episode where they introduce Balthazar, I think. And they kidnap the kid. It's when they have the Staff of Moses.
Yeah.
Dean has a whole thing where he's just like, we're talking about torturing a kid or something.
Yeah.
And he's like pretty against it, but then they have to do it and the kid's on the bed. So they're just like fully, Cass is just fully risking exploding everyone except Bobby. He's like, Bobby, I'm going to give you the full rundown. Anyone else? You could explode and I wouldn't blink.
Why is it a trend that Dean's boyfriends are always extra respectful of Bobby, but also kind of low-key hit on him? Like, because this is true.
Crowley and Cass. Oh, actually, Bobby references that in this episode as well. He's like, what, you want me to make a deal, steal it with the kids?
He's like, do I have to kiss you?
You know,
do you know how mad Dean's going to be?
It's that whole thing of it, if I had a nickel every time this happened, I'd have two nickels, which, you know, isn't a lot, but it is weird that it happened twice.
Oh, okay. I forgot what we were talking about. Something about souls.
Oh, I was just, we started, I think, because I said, he just says,
can I touch it?
Which is like, why did we say that? That's one way you could say it. Or you could like avoid the confusion and just go ahead and say what you're actually trying to say.
Oh, do you know how much of this show could be sold if they just did that, Hannah? Right. There'd be no plot.
They just talked.
It'd only be 3 seasons long.
That's true. Maybe it should have been. I don't know. Yeah. But the only other thing about the soul touching is I think solenoscopy is like a really clever
thing to call it.
Like, and Bobby, like right off the bat, is like, or he's like, I've been cooking this one up while we've been waiting. Like, this is what I'm going to call it when someone asks me about it, which I just think is funny.
I think Dean, actually in like maybe next episode, his way of like combining names of things, which like comes up like over the years, like we get one really fun instance is like a werepire we get in like a later, in a later episode. But like his way of just like naming things, I feel like he and Bobby had that in common.
I do just want to say, there is like a prime piece of irony this week, and that is Dean has the line, play your part.
Yes, I wanted to talk about this as well.
Like, it's a terrible life who?
I literally have a line that says, oh, poor Dean, always being forced into leadership roles he doesn't want, which is when the guy just like puts the sheriff's badge on it and is like, here you go, you're in charge now.
Yeah.
Which like, again, is one of those things where it's like, you'd think that he'd love it. And I feel like on some level he does, but primarily he's just like full of fear at the responsibility that's just been thrust upon him. And I'm like, wow, what an ongoing issue for your character. But then he says to the guy who's, he ends up being shot, but he says to him, I'm not asking you to throw down with him. I'm asking you to play your part. And then he clarifies that the part he wants him to play is the part of being the bait. And I was like, that is so fascinating, considering that like, it's essentially what the angels were asking of him seasons 4 to 5, but it's also like the bait part was never said by the angels, but it was certainly said by John. And like, even if it wasn't in as many words, it was definitely the implication and the end result. So I thought it was so fascinating hearing it out of Dean's mouth. Like, yeah, I'm not asking you to fight the monster the same way that the angels weren't asking him to fight Lucifer. They were just being like, play your role. And your role is essentially Michael's puppet. It's just absolutely wild to hear him use those terms.
And especially considering last time someone told him to play his part. He didn't take it well.
Do it very fucking well, yeah. All right, did anyone else have a point that they wanted to move on to?
Okay. I just want to say that Dean's obsession with the Westerns gets described as a fetish. And I feel like this is going to be relevant later on.
Yeah, I took down the quote where Sam's like, you have a fetish. And he's like, shut up, I like old movies. And I'm like, ah, Tombstone foreshadowing.
I don't know much about this goddamn show, but I do know there is a gay cowboy episode. So I feel like the fact they describe it as a fetish here is something relevant.
Yeah, they set themselves up with that one, honestly. They can't even deny any future gay cowboy allegations because they set themselves up with that.
I was trying to see this episode if the bolo tie he's wearing is the same one. I don't think it is, but it's also like mostly obscured through the episode. So like, I don't know. But I was like, oh, it'd be so funny if it's the same one, because that's like yet another thing that's like Darb era and like it comes back. So also we get obviously him naming Sam as Walker, Texas Ranger, which is like Supernatural. Apollo dodgeball meme.
They were starting the promo early. The CW knew what they wanted to do.
See, I'm telling you, this is the Darb long con.
The Darb long con is Walker.
It's begun.
All for Walker.
Also, speaking of stuff that is recurring, particularly in other eras, the set that they're in, did either of you recognize it? The Western set?
Is it the same one from when they're all in that like abandoned town when the Demon Blood Hunger Games?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's the set. Oh my god!
Do I get bonus points?
Oh my god!
Are we scoring this?
Pop quiz?
Am I getting a good grade on podcasts?
Jamie's getting a good grade in Supernatural set design. My god! Okay. No, it's the same set from All Hell Breaks Loose, and I recognized it because do you remember in our episode on that? I think on part one. We were talking about, or I was talking about how it was interesting watching Sam walk away from the church, which was really bright and white in the background, and down the street looking through the abandoned, darker buildings. And it was the same street. And I was like, oh, I recognize the church. That's the one that I talked about Sam walking away from. But yeah, it's the same set, which I obviously makes a lot of sense because obviously the Demon Hunger Games was all about getting the human-demon hybrid to open the gate to hell, which obviously in this episode they're talking about Samuel Colt has just made, like they're talking about him doing the train tracks and stuff in the open. So I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, I wonder if they used, like they reused this set just because it was like conveniently kind of like appropriate for budget, the Western style and stuff. And it clearly is like near them and stuff. Or if they did it intentionally to reference like it being the same town as in season two. And I can't quite decide if I think that they did it on purpose or not, but I think it's cool either way.
Something, something, something. The CW is broke. Something, something, something.
Accidentally good on purpose. Yeah.
Because we actually got names of both of the towns, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so this is Sunrise. And I don't remember what they called it in All Hell Breaks Loose. We could look it up, but I can't be bothered. If you know, chime off. Let us know if it's the same name.
You're getting a better grade than me in this class.
Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was really cool that they used the same set. Also, I really enjoyed the intro. Obviously, like, it's sort of a more fun episode. And so we got, like, the Western intro with the map and the fire and the, like, music, which I personally really, really loved. And also the note that says, like, 48 hours earlier and 150 years later, I thought was, like, a really fun touch that they absolutely didn't have to put in, but it was fun that they did.
I love that too.
I do have a question for Jamie, which is, how do you feel about them yet again reintroducing the cults to the plot with 3 or 4 episodes to go of this season? Because this has been a problem for you since they introduced it the first time. So with like one episode to go of season one.
We already knew it was there, so I don't think we can count it in the same way. Though it is very funny that it just happened to be like kind of like the same timing. They were like, oh, the cult's really relevant now.
Yeah.
Also, I did Google. It turns out Sarah Gamble wrote All Hell Breaks Loose.
Good old Gamble and her long con.
I feel like no one in the Supernatural fandom would play 4D chess if not for Sarah Gamble. Here's the thing. I feel like none of the other writers are doing it like her.
I agree with you to this point.
She introduced 4D chess to the writer's room.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you that.
Like, she taught them all how to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw something really cool the other day, and I don't know, Hannah, if you maybe have seen this floating around, but someone on Tumblr was circulating this really, like, cool, like, older, like, OG, like, season one fandom Supernatural, like, lore, And apparently the email addresses and stuff and the phone numbers that they give in the show, like the phone number that they give for like John's contact or Dean's contact and stuff, have actually been changed in the audio that you get on streaming services and stuff now. But the original numbers and stuff that they gave out, you could call and you could get the voicemails of the characters, or you could like actually email Joe and you would get an automated reply being like, who is this? Do you know Ash? Like kind of thing. But then as the characters like died off, they stopped replying. So like you could email Joe up until Abandon All Hope. And then if you emailed it, you didn't get a response. And I was like, oh my God, they really have been fucking with us since day one. Like they asked for audience interaction and then they tried to act like we were crazy.
Right.
Isn't that nuts? But like that's, you used so to be sad. Able to call John's number or call Dean's number and like get the voicemail. I think one person was saying there was either an email or like a phone number where like if you texted it, basically you would get clues leading up to the next episode. So like you might get coordinates. And then like if you like had John's number, you would get the coordinates for where their next case was going to be. And then in the show, they'd get the coordinates. Yeah, exactly. Right. No one can see the face Hannah just made, but I can. But yeah, so like it was like so kind of interactive, almost like a video game. And I was like, wow, they have always been playing with us. It's like a game. It's like Taylor Swift and her fucking Easter eggs. Like, this is why this show has the insane fan base that it does, I think. It's because since day one, they were doing this shit to, like, play with the audience in a way that I feel like most shows or most media just don't.
Yeah.
I suppose it's, like, the difference between traditional film and TV and, like, YouTube, where, like, the reason YouTube was so huge was, like, not only because it was just average people doing whatever the fuck they wanted, but also because you could have that direct one-to-one interaction with the creator. You know, they responded to comments. I don't know. It was just fascinating. They were really encouraging the parasocial relationships, not just with the actors and stuff, but with the characters. Like, it's nuts. No wonder people, like, got so invested so early on.
It's so insane to me that they're tapping into the same sort of things that Taylor Swift taps into, considering the overlap between Swifties and Supernatural stands.
Yeah,
I think I would have been like very into that if I had been watching the show when it came out. If I knew that I could get the coordinates, like I would have wanted to do that and had them for a week and like found out all the information I could. And like, yeah, I would have been very into that. And I imagine a lot of people were.
Well, it's like, I don't know about you, but like when I was live, oh no, because you didn't get to live watch, did you?
No.
No. Okay. So I don't know if you know then, but like while I was live watching the SBN tape ball, you could follow on like Instagram and it'd have like behind the scenes photos and you could sort of see like, oh, so like Rowena's going to be in an episode upcoming because there's Ruth and, you know, like that kind of thing. But also the whiteboard, the Supernatural whiteboard, they had like, this is the episode we're shooting, these are the scenes we're shooting, and this is our quote of the day and our song of the day. And like, so you had these clues and you could be like, oh, well, this song, if you look at the lyrics, it's about this and this could be relevant to this plot that we're currently doing. And so you could like piece it together. And it was so fun to like put the puzzle together yourself. And I think like, you know, I don't know if you ever saw, but like coming into 1518, like they had Angel with a Shotgun was their song of the day. And so we were all like, okay, you know, and so so it was just such like a fun way to engage with the creatives behind the show. And so I think that it's really was fascinating for me to see like how long it's been ongoing. And we actually like, we get data from like Spotify and stuff, and we can see like sort of like the age ranges and stuff of people who listen to us. And we have a lot of people who fall into like the 45 plus category. So if you are one of those people and you have been watching this show since, you know, its inception, and you remember any of this, please do reach out and let us know, because I do think it's like incredibly fascinating to see like how fandom, I suppose, has evolved and the way that fans interact with the media and the way that the creatives behind the media interact with fans has changed and shifted over the decades. Because it's like, I don't know, I just find it really interesting. Anyway, this is a complete tangent that I've just taken us on, so I'm so sorry. And I will be quiet for a moment if anyone else would like to raise a point about the actual episode.
I was going to go back to the cult just briefly because you were talking about it. I feel like to me, the cult is Dean's. Like that belongs to him in my head. He owns it. It's his inanimate object that like is way too important to him. I feel like this episode makes that really clear. Like, first of all, he's like so excited about the cult from the beginning of the episode. And like when he's reading the journal, like he's just, it's so cute. And he's so excited. And he's like, oh, this is going to be the most amazing thing I've ever done. But then when Sam gets the Colt, he swaps guns with Dean. Sam could absolutely do it, but he swaps guns with Dean and it's like, this is yours. I'll take the one you're holding. And I don't know. I just think that's really like, it's an interesting like character point. The fact that he does grasp on to these inanimate objects that like become sentient for him, like really important to him too.
That's his emotional support gun.
Yeah.
Right. It's a little, it's a little autistic of him. I don't know. I just think he's like just so excited about it. And I think the more we can see him excited about things, I'm
the better.
Yeah.
I really like that as a point because you're right. Like it does become something that's synonymous with Dean. Like we see him be particularly emotionally invested in the cult. And that's actually something that is ongoing too. Like we will see this again in like Darb era. So this is, I think, something that is worth drawing attention to. And it's probably worth mentioning, like, Dean used the cult to kill the yellow-eyed demon. Like, it's not like he's just decided like, oh, I kind of like it because it's like pretty, or like, I kind of like it because it's like, it's a good weight or something, or it's like powerful and I like that. It's like, this has like a specific value to him that it does not have to anyone else in the universe.
Yeah.
It is the thing that finally closed that chapter, you know? And so I think that that is like significant to him in a way that it can't be for anyone else, even Sam, because Sam didn't pull the trigger. Like, it's important to Sam, but he wasn't the one who made the decisive action. If it's an option, Dean wants it. Kind of like, if they have a car to drive that isn't the Impala, like, I guess it'll do. But if they have the Impala, you best believe, you know, that that's the car they're going to use.
Right.
No, I think it's interesting. And I do also love both Sam and Dean actually being massive fucking nerds over the journal, like just being so excited, being like, yeah, shut up, it is not. Like, that would be me if I had like access to one of Taylor Swift's like notebooks that she'd been doodling songs in or yes, something. Like, that's the energy. Like, don't shut the fuck up. You best be fucking real with me right now. Like,
right.
Don't play with me like this. If these are the OG lyrics for like All Too Well 10-minute version, like, don't even.
Right.
Oh, I do have a question for the two of you, actually. So one thing that has always kind of baffled me about this episode, and like, let's be real, it is a time travel episode, so like, I get it. Like, there's stuff that's going to be like, yeah, plot, 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 convenience, you know. But the thing that trips me out the most, and actually I think Jamie wanted to talk about this as well, the scene at the end of the episode where the postie comes and delivers the package, right? When Sam reads the note from Colt, it says that he got the date and address from his thingamajig, right? His phone. And I'm like, okay, the date? Sure. The address? How? I'm like, how?
Where?
The only thing I can think is that maybe he used the weather app to like get Sioux Falls. But even then, it's not Bobby's home address. It's just the town of Sioux Falls.
Unless like he has it in as his like home address or something. Like, you know how you used to be able to program mobile phones to be like, if lost, return to.
I mean, maybe. I guess you can still do that. I just don't think people bother.
That's like the only thing I can think of, because like, even if he has like that saved under Bobby's contact, like, why would Samuel Colt look for Bobby's contact? You know, like, of all the contacts in Sam's phone.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. But the date, yeah, like, that checks out.
It's just like, oh, luck of the draw, I guess. Like, could be anyone, but we'll send it. Like, imagine if that had ended up at, like, I don't know, Missouri's house or something. Like, and it's just like a random character that has nothing to do with what the boys are doing now. And they're like, why do I have this jar of ash? Like, what are you going to do with that?
Right. Right.
Also, I wanted to just make a note, and I just feel like, I don't know if this is like a US thing. Is Samuel just like a really common name? Because we have so many Samuels as like important main characters in this show, and it just surprises me every time. We have Sam, obviously, but we also have Samuel Campbell, and now we also have Samuel Colt. And I'm like, why do we have so many Sams?
Is this the sort of thing where we find out that like Samuel Colt's fucking like a direct descendant of like it's
like it's a lineage.
It's a lineage thing, like Samuels, and like actually just great grandfather, like
just from the name Samuel. Yeah, I feel like it was a pretty common name around this time. Like, there were a few Samuels or Sams when I was in like especially elementary school, and now when I'm thinking of like the Sams I know, they're like in their early 20s. So maybe just like timeline wise, I don't think people are naming their kids that as often now. But yeah, I think at that point it was like, it was a hot name.
Because I was going to say, like, yeah, kind of off Jamie's point, it kind of feels like it's like not everyone was named Samuel. Unfortunately, the Campbell line had three Samuels and they were an outlier that shouldn't have been counted. Like, we're just really specifically encountering this particular bloodline of Samuels.
Right.
Does anyone have anything that's like a discussion point? Because I have a lot of points left, but they're mostly like just little tidbits that I enjoyed.
Mine's not really like a discussion point, but I have like an inconsistency in the, for like actual thing. Not like in the show, unfortunately, but like for real life. It's 1861 and they're in Sunrise, Wyoming, but Wyoming as a territory in the United States didn't even become a thing until 1868.
Oh, fun.
And then the like town Sunrise, not for 30 more years. So like this wouldn't have been a thing. They just were like, that's okay. Like Samuel Colt wouldn't have even known about Wyoming because he died in 1862. So like he'd have no idea that Wyoming even existed. And I think that's just kind of funny. Like they just barely tried.
That is funny. No, I actually kind of love that.
I know. Like they couldn't just search, just find out if it's true or not.
Yeah, like I understand if it's like a town that you're making up, but if it's one that exists, like maybe just double check that it existed at the time.
Right. And is there any reason why like it couldn't have been a different town in Wyoming? Like, I don't know. Like, could the timeline have just been a little different? Did it have to be 1861? If so, like maybe choose a different place, you know? Like,
yeah.
I just think it's funny. Like the times that Supernatural does like no research, they're just like, this is a good, this will work. No one's going to know. How will they know?
Yeah, we're on it.
Yeah. I think it's so funny.
It's refreshing to see them just not do their research on this. And it's not like some like really horribly offensive cultural appropriation-y type thing that they've not done their research on. Like I'd way prefer this to be the research that gets lax.
Right. That's fine.
Yeah. I don't see any problems there whatsoever.
Yeah.
Speaking of not foreseeing problems, I did want to make a quick note where when the Phoenix shoots the guy who's behind the bars, Dean has a note where he's like, wow, I should have seen that coming. And I was like, well, yeah, babe, everyone has guns.
Like, right.
You absolutely should have seen that coming.
You really should have, Dean. Like, what else was he going to do?
I do really love him wearing that dark trench coat, though. I think it's very fun.
Me too.
He should wear it more often.
I like it a lot.
But he can't come from Cass's trench coat game.
I don't know. I feel like it'd be fun to see them stand next to each other.
Yeah.
I also feel like, just as a rule of thumb, they should stop thinking things are myths. Like, just generally, across the board. Like, Bobby this episode, he's like, oh, I thought phoenixes were just a myth. And I was like, guys, at this fucking point, if you've heard about it, just assume it's real. Like, just assume at some point or other it existed, because you are going to come across it, I promise you.
To be fair, this has been an issue since, like, Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't exist. We haven't ever seen it with our own two eyes. Exactly. So.
One thing that I did want to ask you guys about, because I thought it was really an interesting comparison, is Samuel's secret library versus John's secret storage locker. I just think that it's, like, interesting that, like, obviously this is something that Samuel, like, let Sam in on. Like, this wealth of knowledge that he had tucked away is something that he was like, hey, in case something happens to me, here's some information, versus John being like, hey, in case something happens to me, it won't, so don't worry. And just like not giving them any kind of backup plan or any kind of safety net whatsoever. I just thought it was really interesting to see like the Campbells versus the Winchesters information sharing standards, you know?
Like, yes, girl, give us nothing.
That's what John's best at for sure, is giving his children absolutely nothing.
Hannah, on your point before from them not being consistent with like historical accuracy, I love that Dean went to the effort of like going and buying the clothes, which to be fair, like obviously made them stand out like a sore thumb. But like they went to all that effort to like try quote unquote and blend in. And then Sam showed up wearing a digital watch and a jacket with a zipper on it. Like it was like, you guys.
Right. Right. That's so funny.
Like of all the jackets you could have chosen, you chose the one with the prominent zip up the front and then you rolled up the sleeve so that you could look at your digital watch. Like, okay, babe.
Right.
So slick.
And what's so funny to me is Sam's not the one that gets called out on it. It's like Dean because his shirt's too clean.
Yeah. You're microaggressions in this episode are prominent. We're looking for a man. Yeah, I'll bet you're very clean. Is such an interesting sequence of lines to exist in an episode of Supernatural. Yes. Just putting it out there. Also, I feel like we have to do a shout out to I'm a posse magnet. I love posse. Put that on a t-shirt. I love that line. It's so funny. Like, I feel like that's a really good example of Dean being like a flirt that isn't a grot kind of him being a flirt. Like, it's just him just being like a silly, goofy guy who likes puns, you know? And I kind of like that. And also, it's obviously so like iconic. Like, that gets gifted and used all the time. Also, Sam trying to ride a horse is something that I'm so glad that they made him do.
What's so funny, Denise, I watched that scene and I realized I'm actually probably a better horse rider than Sam is.
Because you've learned how to ride a horse.
Yes.
Because you've done it. Yeah.
It's so funny because, like, he gets on the horse and you see him and he's, like, going away. And he's like, I'm okay. Like, thumbs up. And Dean's like, that poor fucking horse. And I had literally written down that poor fucking horse. And I was just like, Dean and I are sharing that brain cell right now.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I love this episode is that we have, like, not quite the ghost faces effect, but, like, we get the implication of Sam and Dean swearing that gets cut off really creatively, like when Sam steps in the horse shit and he goes to say it's horse shit and Dean cuts him off with authenticity. Like, I really like that, number one, because it's really like funny in the way that it's delivered, but also because it's a clever way to imply that they would swear, but obviously like with censorship they can't. And we actually get that again later in the episode where Dean goes to say yippee-ki-yay motherfucker and gets cut off by the time travel. So I just thought it was like a fun thing that they like obviously had recurring across the episode. And I do kind of wish they did it more within Supernatural, because like it is one of those things where it's like they absolutely would swear, and like we've seen them in episodes like the Ghost Faces like swearing and stuff, and it's like obviously for like TV censorship reasons they can't. So it is like fun to see it like actually be alluded to a little bit more. And one of the other things I wanted to mention is that in this episode we have Dean saying to the Phoenix, I know what you are, so I've got to kill you. And I'm like, do you have to? Because we've also got this sort of ongoing debate, and this has been ongoing honestly since episode one, like since the pilot, and it's this debate of like monsters versus typically men who are monsters, and it's like who is the real monster, I suppose, of the two. And like obviously in this instance the Phoenix is killing people, which is bad, but like he is killing people who were protecting a man who actually did do a horrible thing, and then the Phoenix got framed for it. So I think it's really interesting to sort of have that ongoing discussion of like, let's talk about the morality of monsters versus men, and like, is there actually a good, like an inherent good and bad here? And then Dean's just like, okay, but you are technically by definition a monster, so I guess I have to kill you. It's really interesting. And it, like, I literally reposted something to Tumblr the other day, which was like specific to this, and I'm just going to find it because I do want to like reference it properly.
Okay, but Beth, when was the last time you managed to actually find the post that you wanted to reference?
Here we go. Here it is. Okay. So it's a post by And Humans Love Stories on Tumblr. And it says, can't stop thinking about how many Supernatural episodes are like, here is a monster created by suffering, by cruelty, by violence and trauma, made inhuman by inhumanity. The first victim of this monster is itself. Now we will shoot it with a gun. And I'm like, yeah, that actually is a really good point. Like, so much of this show is about how trauma is a cycle and like abuse creates abuse and stuff. And then they're like, we know how to fix it with further abuse and violence. And it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't the takeaway that we were looking for.
What's that episode where they get rid of the ghost by like inflicting further trauma on the ghost by dragging behind the car?
Which is actually another Darb episode.
Yeah.
Now that people want to mention it. Yeah.
I hate that episode. I hate that.
That's another one of those episodes where it's like the nostalgia effect of like remembering the bit of like Dean being scared of the kitten and like that kind of thing. It's like, oh, like that was a fun episode. And then you go back to it and you're like, oh, that's a not okay episode.
Yeah. I really feel like this episode, like the only reason that they had to kill the Phoenix was for this like spell they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise, like, I really feel like he did not deserve to die, you know? Like, in my mind, like, he was wronged pretty horribly, and he's, like, trying to get revenge, which is something, that's a theme throughout all of Supernatural. Everybody wants revenge, and it's not, like, typically considered a really bad thing. There are times where it is, but, like, overall, it's, like, kind of accepted that people want, like, revenge on things that have happened to them. And, like, all the hunters you meet are hunters because they want revenge on a monster who hurt them in some way.
Yeah, I think maybe we have like one exception to that being Garth, I think is maybe the only one.
Yeah.
What I do think is interesting though is like what you're just saying, like we've seen so many like hunters and stuff go on this like revenge mission, and like that's sort of like normalized, I suppose, for the audience. So it's interesting to have them try and argue it and be like, okay, but it's not okay when they do it. It's only okay when we do it, which is like war crimes just generally.
Again, war crimes, question mark, the entire episode.
Yeah. But I think what is like really interesting is like across most of our main protagonists, we see this behavior across the series. Like we definitely see like Bobby, obviously, and his wife, she died in my arms kind of like imagery that they give us this episode is definitely relevant to other characters in the series. And so I think that it's fascinating to look at it and be like, okay, well, the audience is given the perspective of the protagonists, obviously, and particularly this season, especially early episodes, was very much like you were being given Dean's point of view this season. But having it be like, okay, well, if we looked at our protagonists through the lens of our antagonists, we would see a very different story. And it's all about like who is telling it through whose perspective. And like that is the side that you're most likely to empathize with because it's the side you're given the most context for and the most background for. And I think that this particular season of Supernatural does very, very well to highlight that point. And I think it's going to be interesting as we get into sort of season 7 and we sort of like can reflect back on season 6 a bit more, like, and see how that particular narrative is elaborated on, I suppose, and like the importance of perspective and who knows what information and who has what context.
I interpreted the way that Dean says, like, well, now I've got to kill you, as less of like a, for like everyone else's safety, I have to kill you because you're a monster, and more because like, A, he knows that with history, the Phoenix has to die, otherwise ripple effects and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And just B, like, he needs the ashes. So it's kind of like that resigned, like, oh, well, now I have to kill you.
It's like, God damn it, you made me empathize with your situation and now I know I have to kill you anyway. Okay, I can understand that. It's not the interpretation that I came to, but I can understand it. And to be fair, he doesn't seem like he's taking any particular glee out of killing him. It's just kind of like, well, this is the job. And I guess that's the way the cookie crumbles. It is an interesting piece on like, especially like we were mentioning before about the like play your role sort of like narrative being reintroduced. It is, I think, interesting there as like a concept of like destiny and like, well, this is what happened. So that's what's going to happen. Like we can't change it, especially when like so much of like the narrative of Supernatural is about subverting destiny and about proving that, like, you know, we had fate just last episode be completely undermined by just the will of a couple of angels deciding that they didn't give a shit. I think that is just about all the notes I had left. I wanted to do a quick shout out to the line from Cass where he says, the answer to your question can best be explained by a series of partial differential equations. He's such a little cutie. And I love that line.
I do too. And I love Bobby's response. I love when Bobby's like, maybe a little simpler, and like nods at Sam. Like,
yeah.
Sam's the one that's not going to get it. I think that's so funny. But he doesn't like say it out loud. He's just like,
one of my children is stupid. We both know who it is.
Yeah.
Right. Like he's going to pretend he knows what you're talking about, but he has no idea. So go ahead and just like make it simpler.
And I love that I would fully believe that if Cass sat there with a whiteboard and was like, okay, so this is how time travel works, Bobby would follow it 100%. He'd be like, yeah. You know, kind of like the way that he understands Japanese and the boys didn't know. I feel like Bobby could be an astrophysicist and the boys wouldn't know. Like,
I do feel like Sam would be like, yeah, for sure. Like, I get it. You know, like he would like pretend like he was understanding to a certain extent. Yeah, he's like, I did this in...
in an intro to like fucking pre-law.
Yeah.
We absolutely covered theoretical physics. Yeah.
Right.
Anywho, did anyone have any final thoughts on the episode before we go into the wrap up?
No, I think I'm all done.
I do think the fact that Jensen Ackles sent a picture of himself in this episode to his father and his father was like, you've been rehearsing for this since you were 6 years old. I think that's a really interesting, like, thing about Jensen Ackles to know, you know, like he is Dean Winchester.
Yeah.
something Dean Winchester was out of the way.
Right. From the time he was 6 years old.
Yeah.
Like Dean Winchester actually took control of the vessel.
Right. Like before Dean Winchester was even a thing, he was controlling Jensen Ackles. I think it's cute. And I think like he must have had a good time. You can tell he's having a good time, I think, in this episode. Like the posse magnet part, like he's like, the way he delivers it is like, so it's just fun. Special. I think the way he gets to act as Dean in this episode.
I saw an interview, like an excerpt of an interview from, I think it was 2011. And the interviewer had asked him like, oh, you know, like in The French Mistake, you know, we saw your characters put into our worlds. Like, what would you do if you were put in their world? And he was like, I would literally do everything Dean does. Like, duh. And someone had commented being like, okay, so he's just literally always been like this. Like, this is not, this is like from early seasons, you know? And I think that it's really fun. Like, I think that Jensen is a fantastic actor. I think that Dean Winchester is the role he was born to play. Like, so much went into that, you know, like from the way that he auditioned for Sam and then was like, actually, can I have Dean? He just seems more interesting, you know, like he's just got a special bond with that fictional man in a way that I could only wish I understood.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. And actually, I said to Jamie earlier, like, I think that this particular episode, like, the way that Dean leans into kind of being that like nerdier and like more upfront about being sort of a nerdy little guy and like liking puns and liking like the cowboy and getting the opportunity to dress up does feel a lot more like later seasons Dean stuff. Like, I feel like this episode feels like a turning point in like the sort of way that his character presents his joys, I suppose, especially thinking about like, you know, Last Holiday, for example, you know, and like the way that he was really leaning into like things that he like loved and like the stereotypes that are usually assigned to him don't support, you know. And so I think this is a really interesting sort of break for his character. And again, it's interesting because I think that that becomes really prevalent in Darby era. So this is like an interesting sort of nudging open the door to that a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, he also gets to make a really niche Star Trek reference.
Oh yeah, and be frustrated that literally no one gets it. Including me, I might add, because I've never seen Star Trek.
Me neither.
So, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Jamie and Hannah, would you like to give us a rating for the episode out of 5?
I was going to give it a 4 out of 5 stars.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was pretty fun. I like the silly, goofy episodes. You know this.
Yeah, like, I thought you'd like this one because they stuck to a theme.
They committed to the bit. Mm-hmm. It's not great, some of the storytelling devices they use. But, you know, nothing too egregiously gross.
Yeah, I feel like for the episode itself, I would also give it a 4. But because of how sweet I think Dean is, I'd give it like a 4.5. He's just so cute and sweet in this episode. And he deserves a little like a little boost for his happiness.
The next episode is titled Mummy Dearest. Jamie, do you have any thoughts, feelings, hopes, dreams, fears or predictions?
Well, I feel like they're going to go after Mother of All.
Okay. Sure, not a huge leap.
Not a huge leap. I'm going to predict that it's not going to go the way they think it's going to go.
Do you have any specific thoughts or is that just like your general?
That's sort of my general thoughts. I don't know if I have it in me to predict anything more specific. I've already given you theories today. Like, what more do you want from me?
Fair enough. Do you think that Cass is going to be in next week's episode?
Yes.
Do you have a reasoning for that or do you just vibes?
Yeah, vibes. Like, it seems like we're getting to the pointy end and whatever they're doing with the whole war in heaven thing is overarching plot relevant. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make sense for him to not be there.
Okay, fair enough. In that case, that brings us to the end of today's episode. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us. Did you want to do a little pluggy plug plug for yourself and your pods?
Sure, yeah. So you can find our podcasts. I don't know their actual handles, but Raising Perdition, we're on... We're on TikTok and Twitter. We also have a Discord. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can find us. If you're interested in doing a listen of Raising Winchesters, even though unfortunately we don't have any more episodes, same thing, but Raising Winchesters instead of Raising Perdition, obviously. And then me personally, I'm on TikTok and Twitter mostly at Hannah Loves Dean, but LUVS for loves.
Have you tracked down and killed the other Hannah yet?
Obviously not, or she would have.
Not yet. I did track her down. I tracked her down, but she's still alive. So if anybody knows her, if anybody knows her, tell her to deactivate her Twitter account because she doesn't need it. She's never posted since 2013 or something like that. So No followers, nothing. Just like, just holding on to the handle for no reason. But yes, that's pretty funny.
Cool. And thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've had a lovely time.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And hopefully everyone listening has had just as good a time listening as we have had recording. If you wanted to get in touch with either Jamie or myself outside of just listening to us waffle on your ears for a couple of hours every week, you can always find us on any of our socials, all of the links for which will be in the description below. And yeah, obviously we'll pop all of Hannah's links there as well. And if you haven't already listened to Raising Winchesters or Raising Perdition, which if you haven't, you absolutely should, all of the links for those will be down there as well. And yeah, I think that's everything that we say. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Possible topics for conversation could include...
Should we host a crash course for Beth to remember how to run the podcast?
No, I'll fail it.
War crimes, question mark, yes or no? Nothing else, just the word yes or no.
If you're listening on Spotify, we'll make a poll and we'll have just war crimes, question mark, and you can just answer yes or no. No further context is required. And if you were to be magically transported back in time to a different era, where would you like to go? I think that's a fun little question.
I feel like you've got to answer it then, Beth.
Oh, I don't know. There's too many interesting places, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't know. Like, there's so many different interesting things that happen in history, but there's also so many things in history that I'd want to avoid. So I feel like it's kind of a tricky question I can't answer on the spot. I feel like I would have to really think about it and come up with an answer. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Bye.